Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Linda Clement-Holmes to the broadcast. Linda is the Chief Information Officer of Procter & Gamble, the $76 billion consumer packaged goods company. Linda began her career with P&G 32 years ago, starting as a systems analyst before undertaking roles including the first-ever Chief Diversity Officer of the company, Senior Vice President of Global Business Services, and Global Information and Decision Solutions Officer. Beyond Procter & Gamble, Linda is involved with multiple boards, including as a member of the board of directors of Cincinnati Financial Corporation. Linda received her Bachelor of Science degree in Industrial Management and Computer Science from Purdue University. I recently caught up with Linda in her office in Cincinnati, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discussed the way in which she balances the need for security while pursuing innovative ideas. Principle 4, IT and Business Partnerships, as we discussed her strategic imperatives in her first months as CIO of Procter & Gamble, as well as the methods she has used to become a board-ready CIO, as well as a variety of other topics. This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much. Linda Clement-Holmes, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT.
Thank you very much.
Linda, you have been positioned for this role that you've taken on earlier this year as Chief Information Officer of Procter & Gamble for some time. And unlike a lot of your peers who enter into the role perhaps because of some issue with the prior leadership is asked to leave, the person comes in with very little lead time, oftentimes, of course, from outside of the company.
Right.
You had a very different situation.
Right. Right.
In many ways, you are a leader in driving the strategy that you now continue to lead. And so it's not a major change that you need to enact. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that preparation process and how you went about preparing for the role that you've now had for about a half a year.
Well, you know, I don't know that it's me as much preparing as it much as was being mentored by Filippo, who did a great job. So like you said, it wasn't a case where I came in behind somebody who was, you know, asked to leave and so forth. He had been CIO for well over 10 years. So it was much more about understanding more about what we needed to do going forward and how do you lead an organization or an IT function of IT professionals in a way that keeps us moving and relevant as we had been the last 10 years, but going forward as well. In P&G, because we're promoted from within, it's not abnormal to have happen to me what happened to anybody, right? Because we have a process of our senior leaders, AG and our senior leadership, they look at a regular review of succession planning where it comes everything from, do we have a diverse pipeline? Do our leaders have the right experiences that we need them to have kind of going forward? And they do that in conjunction with looking for where the business as a whole needs to go. So the company needs to go. So they're doing that constantly. So that's not, you know, it's one time thing. It happens constantly, consistently all the time. And that's what happens when you have a promotion within company. Now, every now and then, well, we may have a very specific, unique set of skills that has not grown up here. So, for example, I just hired our chief information security officer because the world changed so much in the last, 2 years when it comes to cybersecurity. Those skills are not ones that we naturally have internally have grown up with, right? So in a case like that, we did go outside and hired a vice president for that. But that's more the exception than the rule. Our chief legal officer was the same thing. We needed somebody with very specific types of experience. So we will do that when necessary. But for the most part, we are trying to groom and build our leadership from within the P&G pipeline of talent because we have such strong talent to begin with.
Mm-hmm. I've always been fascinated by that whole process of succession planning, of grooming the next round of leaders and so on. And
I notice, of course, in reading your background, you have had a very diverse set of experiences within the company, presumably filling out all sorts of skills you were hoping to acquire, learning more about the product and how it translates into the different countries and regions that you operate in and so on. Can you talk a little bit about that journey? And then I would ask as a follow-up question, how you're thinking about that for the next round of leaders behind you.
So, you know, and I don't know if I'm unique in the matter of, I've never been one, as you said, you know, what are you going to do in 5 years and 10 years? I've never been one of those kind of people. I've been with the company 32 years now. A long time ago, I decided that the company and the leaders of the company knew better and had a broader perspective than I did. So I put my trust in them to help decide what experience I needed. So I never really kind of said, I need to go here now, I need to go here. I didn't do that because my view was always going to be so limited into what I only could see. They always would have a much broader view than I ever would have had. So, for example, you look at that background, it kind of goes twists and turns. One of those twists, for example, was being the chief diversity officer as part of the HR function. Nowhere in my little timeline of things, if you ask me when you're growing up or when you be, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? I never said chief diversity officer. Not because I didn't think it was important, because that's not what I saw in my little narrow view of the world. But they had a bigger view, and that bigger view included experiencing another function in the company at the same time as developing a strategy for the company as a whole. So I got both of those things in that I never would have thought about. But see, I couldn't have done that on my own. So that's why I put my trust in them to do that. So now the employees who are behind me, I'm doing the same for them. So I counsel them on that. Trust me, I see a bigger picture than you do. So trust me on this when I say this is a good thing for you to do. And they do. They trust me to do that, which means I have to make sure that I help them understand, coming out the other side or even going into it, what this will do for them. What are the skills it's going to do? What are the experiences it brings? So I can look back now and tell you kind of what all that stuff was. I don't think I could have told you that going in. But I can look back now for sure and say, out of this role, I got this, and out of that role, I got that. I could not have told you that going into that.
Linda, clearly you'd been with Procter & Gamble for multiple decades and therefore didn't have a lot to learn about the culture or the people in the organization. But I wonder what steps you undertook in the first 100 days as you ascended to the role of CIO.
My first 100 days was spent all about listening. Literally listening. I really didn't say a whole lot on purpose. The reason is because people in general have so many diverse perspectives about things that you learn a lot. I ask the same 5 questions to every single person, whether it's somebody low in the organization, high in the organization, peers, other function leaders, consumers, suppliers. I ask the same 5 questions. And that's, you know, what's working well, what isn't working well, standard kind of things. But I ask them, you know, what is the one thing that you said, whatever you do, please don't change this. Another one is, okay, what's the one thing, whatever you do, please do change that. And the last one is, what would you do if you were me? And those same 5 questions aren't applicable to anybody that I talk to. But you will see the themes that come out of that and the thread of what we need to do. And when you get to the business leaders, you ask those questions. That's when I sort of get this feeling around the trends and the opportunity we have. What do we need to do and deliver in terms of skills and experiences for our talent to be able to deliver that for the company? And what's the expectation on us? And to me, that's huge. And that's why I think, for example, for our business of soap, diapers, and shampoo, technology is going to play such a huge key role. Well, of course, we are the IT professionals with business expertise that allows P&G to be able to do that. And so a lot of that kind of comes also from those conversations as well.
I wanted to actually ask you a bit about the role of chief diversity officer. It's not a role that a lot of companies necessarily have, and you operate within a function that historically has not necessarily groomed a tremendous amount of female talent or minority talent. Mm-hmm. And obviously now you, within your role as chief diversity officer prior to this, now I know you've left that to somebody else as you've risen. What are some of the paths that you've seen work well to ensure that there is the appropriate amount of diversity, not only enterprise-wide, as was your purview, but also within IT more specifically?
Well, you know, a lot of it is making sure that we're asking the why and why not question a lot of times. So if, you know, for example, really digging down as leaders, our goal is to make sure that we know the people in the organization, like we really know them. You know, do we know them 2 and 3 levels down, or do we only know the level down below us? And, you know, as humans, sometimes we gravitate toward those who are like us, not consciously. It may be subconsciously or unconsciously. So it means you have to force yourself to sort of work your way down. And do you really know them? So I try to spend a lot of time with people at the lowest levels within the function so that I know them. Those people, actually, they know a lot, by the way. They know a tremendous amount. you get to know those people, and then you have a different perspective about that. So when one of my leaders says, well, we need a person for this role, and, you know, that person's name hasn't come up, I say, well, what about so-and-so? Well, that person doesn't have so-and-so. Well, why not? Okay, why not? So ask the question, why not? Because sometimes it's a matter of just stretching somebody's thinking sometimes to understand there's more than what's in your view, your perspective, right, to see that difference. You know, when I was diversity officer, we spent a lot of time talking about unconscious bias. We spent a lot of time with a professor out of Harvard, Dr. Banaji, and her whole premise is around dealing with unconscious bias, and we all have them. It's a matter of whether you recognize them or not. So I think we need to do that, particularly in a technical function like we are, to make sure, are we dealing with something that's an unconscious bias, just not aware of it? Or are we just not asking ourselves the question, well, why not that person? Are we stretching our own thinking, you know, to give that person the chance and responsibility? And a lot of times we just haven't done that. So I've seen that happen a lot of times. And if you think about it, in particular from a gender standpoint, culturally and socially, women tend to carry more of the burden socially when it comes to the household and things like that. Whether it's right or wrong, different, that's not the point. It's, but socially, that tends to be the case. If you translate that then to the workforce, and if you think about it as if there's women and men sort of on the same starting line of a race, and a male employee may have a full-time spouse at home taking care of everything, and they're running that race, they've got the same skills as the woman on that line. The woman on the line also may have a backpack, and in that backpack are arms and legs of kids and husbands and, you know, all the other kind of things. Even if there is somebody at home taking care of things, it's a social dynamic that we live in culturally as well. And if you think about that, if you took that backpack off of that woman, think about how fast they would be. So by nature, gender-wise, women have a lot of capacity to be able to carry things. So don't make an assumption of the opposite. So getting people to sort of just think differently about it is what I try to do a lot of times, to say, well, don't assume they can't. If you put it in that perspective, you think, oh, wait a minute, they actually probably can run faster than that person. Mm.
Boy, I like that analogy. That's really well put, Linda. Returning to IT specifically, I wonder if you could take a moment just to articulate some of the things that are part of your strategic plan, some of the things you and the team, of course, are focusing on in the months ahead that are the current imperatives.
Right. Well, probably first and foremost is we're moving pretty aggressively toward the cloud and pushing that way. I think the cloud gives us a lot of capability and avenues that we have not yet been able to take advantage of from a scale. To me, it's like scale at the next level. You know, we've done shared services. This is scale at the next level. And it's also in a case where you can do a lot of things very quickly that before would take us a long time to do. So moving that way, we're spending a lot of time also from a information security standpoint, just as everybody is these days, right? So cybersecurity is a big deal for us, as it is for everybody, and making sure that we have all of the right things in place for us to detect, you know, to respond, defend, whatever we need to do. That's another, you know, obviously big priority for us. Operational excellence continues to be a priority. At the end of the day, for us, we're not a tech company. At the end of the day, we're a company, we're a consumer goods company that sells soap, diapers, and shampoo. So for us, it's all about how do we use IT to sell soap, diapers, and shampoo to more customers, more consumers, better, more effectively. That's what it is about for us. Mm-hmm. So that's why I say we're not a tech company, but we are P&G's tech company. So we are the IT of P&G. So we're the ones that, as IT professionals, should be able to do that for P&G better than anybody else could hope to be, because we understand the business and we understand technology at the same time. That's mm-hmm. what makes it unique for us.
You know, there are so many aspects to what currently in the recent past in terms of innovation that this organization has brought about that is at its heart technology or better use of information. Certainly a lot has been written about the data analytics and the global business services, what they're doing under Julio Nemeth and, of course, also under Filippo previously.
Right.
And I wonder, you've mentioned a couple times for very good reason the increasing importance and urgency of security. And if you think about the balance between innovation, which is about risk taking, and security, which is about risk mitigation.
Right.
How do you get that right? How do you ensure that one is not out of balance to too great an extent and therefore sort of overcoming or overemphasizing that versus the other? Do you have a thought process about that?
Yeah, the way I think about it is you have to think about security from the beginning. Hmm. Security can't be the afterthought. That's when the balance gets out of whack. Because if you're only doing innovation without any thought to security at all, then when it comes in later, then the balance is out of whack and it feels punitive almost, as opposed to you build that in from the very beginning and you think about it from that mindset from the very beginning, then to me, the balance is there all along. That's how I think about it. So to me, you can do both, but you have to do both together at the same time. You can't do one without the other. You also can't only do security without thinking about what's coming along later. Same thing. You'll have the balance out of whack at that point, because then everything will be tight and locked down and we'll never do anything ever. So that's why it has to be a partnership together all along the whole way. So then that way you're doing both innovation and iterating and in a secure way. That's the way I want to think about it.
And was the rationale in bringing a CISO on now, certainly you mentioned before, part of it is just that the security threats are becoming so much more complex. Is it also to have a dedicated individual and team whose sole focus is that, to let those whose focus is not that sort of think about things separately, but also able to collaborate together, as opposed to making it part of everybody's job?
I still think it's part of everybody's job. They don't get out of that. It's, for me, fundamentally, it's part of not just every IT person's job. It's part of all P&G employees. For me, it's everybody. But part of bringing the CISO in from external was to bring an external point of view about how do you approach it. You know, you can either approach it from a compliance stance only, or you can look at it from a compliance plus a threat, for example, vector. And we are not used to thinking about things from a threat vector, right? So the compliance is important, but it's an and, it's not an or. So we needed that or, and that or was the threat side of it. And that was the part of the experience from a leadership standpoint that, you know, we just didn't bring. Now we have a focused leadership that has that external experience that covers not only a different perspective from a threat standpoint, but also from an industry. He comes from an industry that is much more focused on it, you know, at the same time of having to deliver services to consumers, right? That's what he brings, and that's why. At the same time, we talked about analytics. I mean, we also now have a chief data officer whose job also is to make sure that we are leveraging data the best we possibly can be in a secure way. So it's not only the CISO's job. That CDO also has to work with the CISO together. So that's why they're not exclusive. Mm-hmm. It's a partnership sort of for everybody. We have a lead technologist. If you think about it from a, he's really the CTO for IT standpoint. Same difference. His job is the infrastructure in a secure way. So none of it is independent. He can do security, but he can't do that without the lead technologist, right, from an infrastructure standpoint. So they all have to work together.
Yeah, that makes sense. Another fascinating thing about your career, Linda, has been that you've been involved in a variety of boards, mm-hmm. whether it's nonprofit boards, mm-hmm. whether it's the board of Cincinnati Financial Corporation. That's, I know, an aspiration of a lot of CIOs to mm-hmm. become more board ready, to mm-hmm. sit on boards, especially public boards, for-profit boards. Can you talk a bit about that journey to sort of establish yourself within the boards of different organizations, as well as the benefits you've garnered from having done so?
Most of my experience prior to Cincinnati Financial had been on nonprofit boards. And a lot of that had to do with personal passion more than anything else. And because I believe in making choices, for years, because I had two sons, I would only work on boards that I could either do with them or for them. So that's how my choice of boards came about. So if it had to do with children, that's what I would do. Now, it just so happens I was also usually the IT person on the board as well. So what it gave me, though, is the opportunity to learn what is it like to be the IT person or to see what the IT operations are in a company other than P&G or an organization other than P&G that does not have the resources that we do. So all of a sudden, the way I normally would do things, I'd have to learn, okay, well, they can't do it that way because they don't have this kind of access to this or whatever. So you learn that from a nonprofit. At the same time, you also learn the things that are not IT related, which is really important when going to a for-profit board. So one of the, I'll call sort of key roles that I think I had over the years was when I led the outsourcing to HP in 2003. That point, I probably did 10% IT. The other 90% was lawyer, cocktail party purchasing person, cocktail party HR person. It was a little bit of everything. And it was enough for me to sort of say, okay, I'm about to be dangerous. I'll be calling a professional, right? But it gave me a view, a point of view across a lot of other areas that I normally wouldn't have gotten. Board work is similar to that in that your job is to govern and not operate. But you see across all of these different aspects and areas. Working in a nonprofit situation is usually in an area organization that delivers something, service, whatever it is, that is different from what I do day to day. They're not selling diapers, soap, and shampoo. They're delivering services to the underserved and community. They're delivering childcare services, whatever it may be. So how do they do that differently? May not have anything to do with IT at all, right? Is there a talent succession? It's an HR issue. You know, are they having legal issues? You learn about all those kind of things. Those then carry with you when you start going into the for-profit world, but on a much bigger basis. And probably the biggest learning I think I have from being on a for-profit is the role that you have as a director is to govern, not to operate. And that's really tough because we are trained for years to, I know how to fix that. I know how to do that. Well, okay, but they have a CIO. So how do I help them reach their goals strategically? How do I help do that? So it's about strategy. Our worries around the strategy of the company. Our worry is, so I think about it, and what I add to them is the IT expertise around, is the IT strategy helping the company deliver the goals that it's trying to do. But that also means I have to contribute on other parts of the company as well that are not IT related. So you have to have had some experience, or it's beneficial to have had some experience in a nonprofit organization doing that, because it's sort of, it feels outside of your comfort zone. Well, who am I to sort of, you know, consult on childcare, or who am I to consult on? In my case, it's insurance, right? Well, running a company, there are some fundamentals that, you know, that's why there's so many business book written, right? Because there's fundamentals. Well, you can still do that, right? But the more you do that, the better. Now, what I will say also to me, which is why I'm grateful that the company allows us to do this, is that it also helps me think differently about how I do my job inside P&G, because then I know what are the kind of things that the board does worry about, right? Because it's not a perspective I probably would have that I would worry about, right? But because they do, and they, part of what they do and the benefit of having a board is to bring a different perspective. Well, if I didn't sit on another board myself, I probably wouldn't understand sort of what are they trying to get at? What are they doing? I really truly get it now because I sit in that same seat somewhere else, right? And it's very different. So I personally am really appreciative and grateful to have the opportunity to do that and to be on a great board that I am too, with people who've been around for a while, who's so helpful in helping you understand too, like how you can actually add more value.
My last question for you, Linda, as you look out into the next, say, 1 to 3 year time horizon, are there certain trends that particularly excite you? We've talked a bit about some of the important ones like analytics and cloud that are already part of your strategy. Are there others that you're thinking about and contemplating?
The Internet of Things is big for us. If you think about it, the last 5 or 6 years, how the smartphone alone has changed the lives of our consumers. If you think about what people will turn around and go home for their phone, they can leave their purse, leave the wallet, they'll leave all, but they will not leave that phone. We now are attached by watches because of how technology is now integrated into our consumers' lives. Well, this will be a big one for us, which is why we are expanding beyond our shared services from an IT function standpoint, because it's into our consumers' lives every day. There's technology that allows things to disintermediate other things. If you think about the publishing industry or the music industry or what's happened with all, or even Uber. Those are technology-based, but not only technology. That's not the only thing that they do. So you have to think about it in that way. I think the world is huge when I think about the opportunity that IT professionals can play, particularly when you take what we do, not only from a technology standpoint, but apply that mastery to our business. That, to me, is huge. That is absolutely huge. So it's not technology for technology's sake at all. It's about how do we apply that. We think about the Internet of Things and whether it's toothbrushes that sort of tell you how many, did you brush last night? Did you brush well? And the data that comes from that. And we can make better, you know, well, next time your toothbrush is going to go faster. I mean, I don't know, all those kinds of things. Well, that makes a consumer's life better, like all the time and every day. So that to me is just, it's a phenomenal opportunity. And I feel good that we've got such a great function of people in the organization that allow us to be able to take advantage of that.
Makes sense. Well, Linda Clement Holmes, thank you so much for joining us on the Forum on World Class IT. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' 5 principles of World Class IT. The 5 principles are as follows. Principle 1 is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that, first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important, then, that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.